Evenings with Rebecca De Unamuno.
Garth Popple is here to talk to us about drug addiction and in particular harm reduction and what that actually means to those who are affected by drugs and also those who are around those people, and also in particular the epidemic of ICE. And it's been called an epidemic for many reasons, and we're going to chat with Garth now. Garth, it's a joy to have you here. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you.
Excellent. If I just get you to come a bit closer, good on you. Thanks, Garth. Now, I'm just going to ask you, how did you get involved in this particular area of work?
Back in 1979, like many people, were just minding their own business and was asked to come onto a community group, and also I was doing some counselling. And I'm probably one of the older school that it started as a counsellor and ended up by not leaving and ending up being the CEO of an organisation, something that doesn't happen much these days. So I've sort of done every job you can do in the drug and alcohol sector.
Yeah.
And now I'm CEO some 37 years later.
That's amazing, isn't it? And you've helped over 40,000 people in your time. And you must have seen some incredible stories throughout that particular period. What is the most striking thing that you find about those that are grappling with drug addiction?
I think the most striking thing is that treatment works and help is available and people do recover, because unfortunately, you only hear about the cases that don't make it. You hear about the cases that end up in prison or in ED departments. You don't hear about the people who've made it in their career life, because people who've made it don't like breaking their anonymity and saying to people, I used to be a drug addict, I used to be an alcoholic, I used to be this or be that. They actually try and hide the fact that that's their past. So you don't hear the good news. So for me, I'm lucky. I see people who want to do something about themselves. That's why we call We Help Ourselves, the name of the organisation. And I see lots of people who come back, a lot, a good proportion of our board of directors are former consumers, former users, 20, 30 years off drugs. So I'm lucky. I see people who have made it. So that inspires me to keep going.
Yeah. And you mentioned that it's up to those that want the help to come to you.
Yes.
How hard is it often for people that are under the grips of drug addiction to come to that decision?
I often describe our organisation and organisations like us. We're like the ambulance at the bottom of a cliff. Society is sort of either putting stigma on them, locking them up. They're feeling so bad about themselves. By the time they get to us, they're completely trashed.
Yeah.
They've been trapped in a downward spiral. And by the time they get to us, there's nothing left to do but to try and seek help. And when they've got to that point, there's nowhere else to go. So it's almost like I've got very good product to work with, because people actually want to do something about themselves, but not everybody's going to make it. That's the unfortunate situation.
It is unfortunate. And I guess over the years as well, different drugs have come in and out of vogue, I guess, as it were, is probably the way to describe it. And we're currently faced now with the issue of ICE.
Yeah.
And for those who aren't aware, what is it that ICE, what effect on the body does ICE have?
Well, if we just paint a picture of where we start, people say, ICE, they think it's a new drug, methamphetamine. Well, it's probably much stronger than it used to be. But going back, people say, there's no help for people using ICE. I say, well, that's a lot of rubbish, because I've had this saying that we've been treating people with methamphetamine or amphetamine problems since Elvis Presley was a boy, because we've been doing it. The difference is the concentration of people presenting now. Over the years, since the late 70s, early 80s, our main presentations were people using heroin. And thus the methadone program started up, because so many people were using heroin.
Yeah.
Probably amphetamine users were around maybe 20%, 30%. Ford wine, nearly 40 years. Now, most of our presentations are people, you know, we use ICE, but it's methamphetamine. It's an amphetamine, but the difference is it's a very, very strong amphetamine. And people get very, very hooked on the having the shot, feeling the rush, All they think about is getting another feeling like that. Mm. You know, I never realise when people say, I'm getting out of it, they're actually trying to get out of the situation they're in. So by using more ice, they're getting out of the situation they're in.
Yeah.
So when we get them, they've been trashed. Their physical health is very poor. Mm. Teeth are poor. They've had lots of mental health and psychosis issues. So, you know, the heroin addict would come in, would sit around very sort of docile when they've come in after their detox. The ice user or methamphetamine user, very burnt out, very psychosis, very confused, have a complication of mental health issues. They're a much more complex person than the person who used to walk in the door, say, 5+ years ago.
Yeah, right. And as far as the cross-section of the community that is affected by it, is it a drug that is permeating the suburbs and that you know, people will be, you know, sampling in an area that you wouldn't necessarily think?
Well,
is that true?
It is true because I've got out of the 6 residential services that we run, two of them in regional areas, one being in Cessnock up in the Hunter Valley and the other one at Nambour up in the Sunshine Coast.
Mm.
Ice use is much higher.
Yeah, right.
I think it's the old days where use had to be near a supply chain for your heroin. It would usually be imported because ice can be manufactured locally. Regionally, it's probably more undetectable. You're going to the shopping centres anywhere in Australia. You can get ice. Someone somewhere has got the precursors to put it together, make up the amphetamine or the ice, and mix all different weird and wonderful things. And there's even the synthetic ice and synthetic cannabis. And there's such a choice. I mean, people have got, you know, it's the availability. I've heard clients say when they can't get the real thing, they can get the synthetic.
Yeah.
So the availability will dictate what's going down.
Yeah, that's right. And so when somebody finally does make that decision to seek help and comes to you for that help, what are the first few steps that you think are important to take with somebody who is struggling with drug addiction?
Well, the first thing is to get them to, well, hopefully they've been through a detox.
Right.
And if they've been detoxed, not always are they fully detoxed by the time they get to us. There's always sort of that residential detox. People who come in on ice are usually need that more settling down period. You've got to be a little bit more flexible with if they need to take a lie down, if they need to take a bit of time out, and make sure there's plenty of people around. This is the beauty of a residential treatment or therapeutic communities of what we call ourselves.
Yep.
There's lots of people to talk to. The last thing you want is to be parked in a corner somewhere or parked in a bed somewhere and your head's already racing 10,000 kilometres an hour.
Yes.
When you're on your own, it's going to pick up more. So we want lots of people around to support them, start getting the nutrition into them, start, you know, and at first they don't want good food. At first they won't want to exercise much. But get them walking, just getting them talking and trying to get them what we call plugged into the rest of the people at the residential service. We call it the community because it's a therapeutic community. And when people start feeling comfortable being there, they're more likely to listen to advice because the other thing is some of them had head injury.
Right.
Some of them had overdoses. Some of them have done a lot of damage to themselves. So actually to stop that stress that people are experiencing, that they can start taking on board information, then and only then can we start working with people to start finding out, well, where are we going to start? Is it a socialization problem? Is it because there's been a lot of abuse in their background?
Yes.
Where do we start? Then we start working how to move forward with each client has their own case plan and we move forward from there.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And the organisation is, of course, We Help Ourselves. And it's important for the individual, I suppose, to take that first step. But then once they leave you and the confines and the safety of your program, what's important for somebody who's trying to remove drugs from their life permanently?
Okay, there's an old saying, it's probably fairly easy to stop using drugs.
Mm.
Staying stopped is the challenge.
Yeah.
We have aftercare programs right from the very day that they start with us. We start introducing them to, they may not agree with the philosophy. We introduce them to self-help groups like out in Narcotics Anonymous or Crystal Meth Anonymous.
Mm-hmm.
There's all sorts of community-based organized smart recovery. There's lots out there that they can tap into. So even though they're with us in their care, we tap them into that on a daily basis. So even if they leave after 7 days, for example, they might say, we don't want to be here anymore. We want to make sure they've got somewhere to go that's safe and be with other people who won't judge them,
Mm-hmm.
Where they don't feel stigmatised,
yes.
That they can feel comfortable and continue on being in a positive peer group.
It's so important. It's so important. And it's having those structures in place that I think can help just even just the next week, the next day, just even having somebody there that wasn't there yesterday is a big, big change for a lot of these people. And then, of course, you get those that say, no, throw them in jail, throw away the key, lock them up permanently. They're, you know, if somebody has, you know, committed a crime in order to score some drugs, for example. What's your idea on that? Yeah. Do you think incarceration is a good way or approach to dealing with drug addiction?
No. Mm. Incarceration is just locking away the problem.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, if they've done some crime, steal a car, done a robbery, that's a crime.
Yes.
But for people who have a drug addiction, you know, why do you lock a person up for having an illness?
Yes.
Because that's what we're talking about here. Yes. Not everybody agrees with an illness, but the World Health Organization says it's an illness. And I've been in the game, as I said, for 37 years.
Mm.
People don't do that to themselves unless there's something going wrong.
Yes.
My thing is, if you can introduce people to treatment, we know it works. You don't have to send children to these places overseas and $30,000. I mean, because the problem is when they come back, they've got the same problem. What are they going to do when they come back?
That's right.
We make sure we have good aftercare programs. But when you look at the dollars, when people say throw away the key, you know what? We're about $120 a day per bed.
Yep.
People stay with us roughly 3 to 4 months in the primary treatment before they go into our aftercare network.
Yep.
A prison is around about $330 a person last time I looked at it.
Yep.
When you start looking at a general hospital bed or emergency department bed, you're talking up in the thousands of dollars. $120 seems a pretty good investment.
Yes.
And they're not getting reinforced with negative peer group influence. They're being reinvested. They're being re-encouraged by positive peer group influences.
That's right. That's right. And that's often the thing with prison. Like they say that, you know, somebody goes in for one thing and learns 10 things about how to do something else,
well,
you know.
The old saying used to be, you can't sit in the barber's chair without getting a haircut. So if you're in a positive environment, you're going to get a positive outcome, hopefully, or more positive.
That's right.
If you go into a negative environment, you will learn the tricks pretty quickly, what you want to do to survive out there and using land, you know?
Exactly right. And so for those family members or friends who suspect that somebody is, you know, using drugs, it's a difficult subject to broach with somebody because, I mean, obviously you don't want to offend them if they're not and that kind of thing. But it often, as you said, touches upon a more serious issue, which might be an emotional issue or something, you know, a death in the family, perhaps anything that may have occurred in their lives. How can somebody reach out and help them take that step to stop?
Okay. When it comes to family members, I always say for every person that has a chronic, or not even chronic, a drug dependence issue, there's probably 10 family members that are experiencing the reaction to that.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think these days you can actually talk to somebody on the street that hasn't had someone who's got a problem with drugs, alcohol, gambling, or some addiction. So I think it's becoming more obvious. I would say to them, there's good organisations like Family Drug Support. They've got a website. Look it up. See what there's other family members, other mums and dads, brothers, sisters, who've had exactly the same problem.
Yes.
Same challenge. And a lot of people feel embarrassed by it. They don't like talking about my son or my daughter's using drugs. There's people there, exactly the same issues. There's other organisations, like I mentioned, self-help. There's Al-Anon for people who've got alcohol, loved ones who've got alcohol problems. There's Nar-Anon for people who've got, for family members who've got addiction, narcotic problems.
Yeah.
There are so many groups out there that can help people. And then they will say how to broach. I mean, you know, you've got everything from kick them out of the house to just don't give them money or support them when they're doing the right thing and don't support them when they're not doing the right thing. You've got so many people telling you so many different things.
Yeah.
A parent is just absolutely shell-shocked about, what do I do?
Yes.
What's the right answer? And I think, well, talk to people who've been through the experience, find out what they think. And then obviously the other side, there's professional help you can get as well.
Yes.
But then you've got to get an appointment, and you've got to get there.
Mm, mm.
This way, dealing with people, it could be a very early gateway to getting professional help, to find out what other people have done, get the experience.
Exactly. And you mentioned when we started chatting about how it's a subject that's very difficult for some people, because there's always these assumptions made when you say that somebody's been using drugs. Yep. You know, there's always a stigma attached to that. And it's been a similar case with mental health issues as well. And we've started that conversation with mental health, where Mental Health Week has provided a lot of insight for people in regards to those issues. But drug dependency is something that I think has been swept under the carpet for a lot longer than that. And do you envisage any kind of education programs that can be put in place for young people, for example, that doesn't, you know, lecture them and talk at them and tell them what they should and shouldn't do, but actually guides young people to know what's out there and the consequences physically and emotionally on the use of those drugs?
Look, you know what? Addiction's been around since the beginning of time.
Yeah.
You know, if you send someone, for example, that's a former drug user, and you send them to a school to talk about drug use, if they talk about their drug use and how it took them to the depths of addiction and despair, you know, you might get 3/4 of the class going, oh, I'm never going to use drugs.
Yep.
But there's the other kids going, well, didn't hurt him. Yeah. He looks pretty healthy to me.
Managed to bounce back.
Drugs didn't do him any harm.
Yep.
And they'll look for the other side of it. So, I mean, you're always going to have that group of people. But I think living skills programs will sure help for schools and people to look for people who've been, we've got White Ribbon Day coming up soon.
Yes.
People who've seen people who've been affected by abuse, people who've got that history. I mean, I've heard some of the stories that some of the women have talked about before they've come to us.
Yeah.
I've thought to myself, I think drugs saved their life.
Yeah.
Because I don't know how you could, you know, some of them, I don't know how they didn't hurt themselves more. Probably, because really, they were self-medicating themselves.
Yeah.
People say, oh, they're junkies, they're using drugs. They were self-medicating their pain.
Mm-hmm.
How do we judge that?
Yes.
You know, and because they felt shame, they couldn't come out. And the guys are no difference. You know, the guys, we have guys come from prison who've been raped in prison.
Mm-hmm.
Very hard for them to talk about that in front of other blokes.
Of course.
But when you're with like, and you've got people who've been through those depths of despair, there's no judgment. So that's where it's been fantastic for us, that we can do a lot with people because we get rid of the rubbish out of the way first. But the first things first, we've got to say to people, you haven't got two heads and three legs and six fingers on each hand. You're a garden variety person for someone who's used drugs and become dependent on them. Sure, you came in through this side for abuse, then you could have the kid who come in from a GPS school that all these brothers turn out to be doctors and solicitors, and he's gardening and feeling embarrassed about earning a good, I mean, just crazy perception issues of themselves. Most people, no matter what road they came into our services, all have a very low opinion of themselves, lowest self-esteem, and feel like they've been beat up. Our job is to get that out of the way, let people know they're worthwhile human beings.
Yes.
They are good people. Maybe their behaviour's been bad, but they're good people deep down. So how do we get people around to feeling good about themselves? Because people who feel good about themselves don't want to use drugs.
That's right. There's so many other factors involved, isn't there? It's a much, much bigger issue than I think a lot of people realise. And it's been so great to chat with you, Garth. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
It's been a joy. That, of course, was Garth Popple. And his organisation is, of course, We Help Ourselves. And it's a fantastic thing. I love the idea of we help ourselves, we look after ourselves, we make that first step. It's a fantastic initiative, and it was a pleasure to chat to Garth just then.
This is Evenings with Rebecca Dayunamuno.